started today with our City Council work meeting for Wednesday, May 27th. We would like to note that all members of the council are present, with Council Member Henderson being present electronically. So we will go ahead and get started with item 1.1, review of this evening's agenda. Are there any items we need to make adjustments to? Okay. Seeing none, 1.2, future agenda items the council members would like placed on the agenda. Okay. We will move straight into item 2.1, discussion regarding Rio Tinto's dust mitigation efforts. And we've got Rio Tinto participating electronically, so we will bring them in.
Great. Thanks so much, everyone. I should be sharing my screen now. Are you able to see everything okay on your end?
Give us just a moment.
Oh, sure. I'll just introduce myself while we start. My name is Virginia Alexander. I work at Rio Tinto Kennecott. I'm on the Communications and Communities team with Piper Rose. And I help support our MIND team, who will be sharing the presentation today. Is everything all up and running now?
Yep.
Yeah, go ahead.
Perfect. So I'll hand over to Tom Francis to kick us off. So Tom, if you want to get started.
Yes, please. Can you all hear me okay?
I can hear you okay, Tom.
You can hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Sorry, thank you. So thank you very much for the opportunity to present. My name is Tom Francis. I'm the mine manager, and Tyler and myself are going to take you through our dust mitigation strategy. And I really just want to just touch on the first slide. As you may have guessed, I'm not from these parts, but I do want to emphasize that other than the safety of our operators, nothing is a higher priority to me as a mine manager here than mitigating dust and being good partners. And that's made very, very clear to me by the general manager, my boss, and by the managing director. And so I'm very grateful for the opportunity with Tyler and with Virginia just to talk you through how we go about doing that. There are, three main strands which Tyler will touch on in more detail. We have a number of pieces of equipment and resources, including very large voluminous sort of water trucks to help us. We have a sort of supply of water from on site that we use, and we over the years we've started to use a few surfactants and other additives to help with dust suppression. And then we think and we review every year how we position our dust spotters, where we need to position them as the shape and cut and size of the spots evolve, and to make sure that we're doing as good a job as we can of either not having any dust, or if we do have dust, spotting it as quickly as we can and ensuring that we cease operations until we've got it under control. So my main point really is just say thank you for the opportunity to present. This is very, very high up our priority list. And I'll hand over to Tyler here, who's a key team member and also a citizen of Herriman, to talk us through the next few slides.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having us. I appreciate it. I got the opportunity to do this with you guys last year. So once again, we'll be here. I think last year we were a little late in the season to get to you guys, but thanks for having us. And like, I'm a Herriman resident. So honored to be here to share what we're doing up at the mine with our community and our engagement there. You want to jump to the next slide, Virginia? This is our watering strategy areas and priorities. It's kind of a more of a map, probably a little bit more suited for us, but down in this red area, down in the bottom corner, where you see our dumps, our SD, AR, and Sioux dump areas, that's the area that is probably closest to Herriman, right over there going over towards Butterfield Canyon. We have 8 water trucks that we run throughout the pit and throughout the mine. Each truck holds about 50,000 gallons of water. Takes them about 10, 15 minutes to top that off with our watering pump stations, and they can run through that water tank in about a little under an hour for each truck. Just to give you an idea of how much water we're putting down onto the ground. There's a priority that you can see up there are obviously red area, which is the Sioux area. The other area of priority is the upper up in the top in the green area. That's the area above Poppleton, We break it into two separate areas for the pit. We have an upper pit and a lower pit area, each with priorities, where we prioritize the water trucks to minimize the dust. As we work through this, the yellow area that's up on there, the Buckeye Parnell area, that's an area that's been shut down and we're not currently using through that area. So we'll continue focus out on the front dumps where the dust is visible and make those our number one priorities. So jump to the next slide.
Yeah, I'm just going to see. I see that it's showing something a bit strange, so I'm going to see if I can get it to the bigger screen. Yeah, is that better? Great. Okay, perfect. Sorry about that, everyone.
Okay, I can still see it. So we get the water out of the pit, out of the area. We have several water pit stands where we fill up those water trucks, those 50,000 gallon trucks. The two closest out towards the Harriman area or over by the SD and New Sioux dump areas in that red area, we have one going down to those front dumps. There's a water stand where we can pop the water trucks off and fill up. The other one up is at our 60 to 80 water stand. It's 1.5 million gallon tank. You can actually see it from the valley if you look up right between the mountain there, not over on the Copperton side, but over towards the Butterfield Canyon side. You can actually see our 1.5 million gallon water tank there, where we also pull from and get water from. The other two, we have one in the lower pit, the very bottom of the mine, where we suck water out of the bottom and fill up right there. And then one at 6190 is kind of where the admin and office building areas are, where we can get water from and run it up to the front dump. So we got pretty close access to visible dust areas and plenty of areas to pull water from and get it out on the roads. So those are our primary. We did also this year build a temporary water stand down at 6190 that we're actually going to keep into service. So if we do run into any issues or areas, which pulls water from the upper pit closer towards the front dumps, the Sioux area pulls water from that area and takes it down to 6190. So we have a temporary backup down in that area as well that we will continue to use if resources, if we start running low on water or lose a pump or something. So we have a little bit of backup plan there just in case. Want to go to the next one, Virginia? We use chemical dust suppression throughout the area, throughout the mine as well. We use a surfactant that we actually mix right into the water trucks as they go and get fuel. It uses very minimal amount of it. It's like a gallon for every 50,000 gallons. It's more like a dish soap. So when we go out and spray and condition the haul road areas where the heavy equipment's working, it actually keeps the roads wetter a little bit longer. Like I said, it's like kind of like just like dish soap, pulls out of the tops of the truck and we're filling them up. The other chemical suppressant that we use is magnesium chloride. We bring in a contractor and spray that out with a little semi truck. It usually sticks to the ground a little bit longer and stays intact a little bit longer, making it so we have less dust picking up in those areas. It's also in areas that we don't water quite as much. That main code 51 area that you see there, that is a big travel area across the front of the mine that we will hit with magnesium chloride. We also are doing a big project this year, a crusher relocation project. You guys might have seen this, but there's a lot of work going on down right off U-111, bringing in a lot of contractors and a lot of equipment for a crusher relocation project that we're working on. We are in the process of getting that area on the list for the magnesium chloride tubes and working with the contractors and stuff that are working down that area to make sure we cover those areas of high traffic with the magnesium chloride as well. It's great stuff. It works really well. One bad thing is after it rains, it seems to lose its life there. So we do apply it quite regularly throughout the hotter months. So as you can see, both areas, we use the chemicals pretty much all over the pit. So whenever the waters are getting water, the water stands, those four areas, they can pour in that surfactant as well. Okay, next one. Part of our license to operate, like Tom said, we've explored options with using cameras, using people, having somebody down in the valley right off U-111 has been our best success so far. They can actually physically see the dust. We do monitor with cameras and try to pick up on and see it, but it's just not as good as having out there in the field actually looking up and see it. That yellow star that you see on the screen is at gate 47, which we call. It is between the Jordan landfill and 118 South, right there off of U-111. From that vantage point, the dust spotter can see pretty much the majority of the mine face, and what the valley can see. Turn to the second location down there at the bottom of the page at our security area, or where the employees actually meet. We do have cameras and stuff set up there, and are currently working through a process of getting access to cameras that shine more on the pit from other areas that we can get to the dust spotter. Right now, the dust spotter sits down there and is physically going to pick up with binoculars doing that, but we are in the process of working to get them access to a computer and additional cameras so they can be monitoring a little bit more of that end. We do hot seat those guys out. They are down there pretty early in the morning. Get down at about 9 o'clock, and they will be up there until the sun sets, just watching, making sure we can control it. So, you want to hop to the next one? I talked on a little bit of this already. The spotters down there do run a logbook, too. They log in every hour. They'll log the conditions, the areas that we're running for the mine, how things are looking, if they've seen anything that they need to report up. So we do keep a logbook there. We also keep a logbook with our dispatchers in case there's an outside call or somebody else needs to call, or if the spotters down there in the valley look up and see something and call dispatchers. So we run two sets of logbooks to make sure we're not missing anything, and then if we have something happen or we get a call, we can follow back and get some documentation and see what we're going on in working areas. Already this year we have seen some increased high winds, and we have shut down areas, shut down some dumps, reallocated where our trucks were running to minimize some of the dust that we've seen until we could get some areas under control. So pretty early in the year, high temps, a lot of winds, so already doing some work in those spaces and that areas. We are also looking into a little bit more of a technology-based, working with some team members and some other mine sites, looking to see if we can get something on a camera system that runs a filter through like thermal imaging that can pick up dust and create alarms and triggers that we can look at and see and monitor. Still way early in the stages of that, but it is something that we're continually looking at doing and looking into to see if we can make any advances to make this better. So, jump into the next one. The dust mitigation process, kind of have a flow chart here. For the dust spotters, obviously it's everybody's responsibility that works up at site and at property to minimize the dust, if they're creating it, to minimize it, or if they see it, to call it and shut down an area. The flow kind of works through the dust spotter in this chart, so the dust spotter sees it, they immediately contact production control, shut down the area right away. They'll work through the process with the supervisors, the water truck leads that we have in place, and find out where they're at, what the location is. We have water trucks that are broke down. We're going to shut down areas just to minimize the dust. The process seems to work pretty good. It seems like every year we get a little bit of challenging, like, oh, there's just a little bit, so we'll be okay. But it's been reinforced and reinforced over and over. If you see it, just shut it down and stop it so we can minimize the dust that's visible from the valley. So we do see an increase of visibility as the sun sets and the sun gets behind it. So during those times, we do try to set the next teams coming up that are coming on for the later shift. I already have the water trucks full, so when they get out and going, they're ready to rock and roll and keep the dust down and knock down through the evening as the sun gets behind the dust. There's also a process flow for outside of the mine. If you want to hit the next slide, Alan, Virginia. For outside of the mine, Rio Tinto, we have a group of environmental team, phone numbers on here. They handle our environmental. We have an environmental hotline, and then our community relations as well, Piper and Samantha, that are on here. Piper joined you guys last year. I believe you guys are familiar with Piper. She talked quite a bit. And then Samantha has been jumping in, and we'll be working with you guys as well. It's kind of the same process flow. They get the call. You get a hold of production control. People in the mine, it's like they control the whole operation of the mine, where stuff's going and how things are flowing. It's kind of like air traffic control for the rest of the world, but it's dispatched for us. They're the ones that'll stop it. So when they get the call, we'll shut down the areas and log and note and take pictures and identify those areas. So after we do that, if we do get a dust complaint, we do a full investigation, which we'll work with the environmental team, our relations team, find out if there's something that we missed and anything we can do to improve or make things better. So that's kind of how the process flow works. Tom, you have anything to add? Did I miss anything?
can't hear you. You're on mute.
I think you're on mute.
Can't hear.
Okay.
There you go.
I think I'm off the double mute. Sorry. You'd have thought I would have learned by now. I don't have anything else to add, Tyler, other than to say that we'll share these slides so that Herriman have the contact numbers for those of us, and just to see if there are any questions or anything else that we can answer or help with.
I think we're good. Yeah.
Good job.
Appreciate your efforts.
Yeah, guys, there's not too much changed. Like we went through it last year, not too much has changed. Just like I said, we just kind of updated some areas, identified some things, and looking at the new technology to see if anything else can help. We're pretty much the same where we were last year, which I think we had pretty good success last year. So we'll keep the visible person out on the ground watching for it. So.
As a city, we appreciate the efforts that you guys put in. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity just to come and present. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we will move on to item 2.2, discussion of a proposed rezone request for 6.2 acres of property located at approximately 4950 West, 126 South from AMSD, Auto Mall Special District, to C2 Commercial. Michael.
Thank you, and I think we're just bringing up our short presentation on this item tonight. This rezone request was initiated by the city. It's property that the city controls and is currently part of the Auto Mall Special District Zone. The request, as mentioned by the mayor, is to rezone a portion of the AMSD zone, the Auto Mall zone, to C2 Commercial. We'll walk through this. Timeline, this was initiated by staff in April. We had been working with a restaurant user, Garage Grill, in this area, and we realized that the location on a proposed subdivision plat that we've been working on actually is not in the C2 zone, it's actually in the AMSD zone. And then we've had a public hearing notice on April 27th. The Planning Commission reviewed this on May 7th and recommended approval to the City Council with a 6-0 vote. Of course, you as the legislative body have the final say on this matter. Tonight, of course, is just a discussion, and we will schedule this for a future action at the direction of the City Council. And that can be as soon as our next meeting or whenever the Council would like to see that appear on your agenda. This is a copy of the general plan. The little dashed yellow oval is approximately the area in question. The general plan did show it as commercial. Both the AMSD and the C2 zone, of course, is consistent with that general plan designation. On this particular map, this is actually an exhibit from the text for the AMSD zone. It really is to show the boundary of where the AMSD can reside. The exhibit indicates a pretty healthy portion of the southern end of this property being commercial. We didn't know exactly where that line was going to be. And when the city actually had initially rezoned this property C2, which you can see in this exhibit, we thought we were estimating the right depth as to what our potential commercial partners wanted in this location. Again, this was before we even had an application on the table. We were really just trying to signal to the market that we intended to have commercial frontage in this location. But once we started actually working with a potential development partner, it did appear that we did not have enough depth to that C2 zone. And again, going back to our exhibit in the actual AMSD text, you can see we did anticipate having a little more depth to that C2 zone. So the proposal is approximately 6.3 or 6.2 acres to extend that C2 zone to the northward. Again, the City Planning Commission did make a recommendation for approval. I'd be glad to answer any of your questions at this time. Also, this is initially essentially submitted by our economic development team, and they are also available for questions.
Mike, can you go back one slide? Is it anticipated then as well, and I believe that, I guess what's referred to as the garden plots there, those are, is it anticipated that they will be zoned C2 as well in the future?
So we'd probably need to look at the general plan, and you can see right here on the general plan, it is showing commercial.
Okay.
Yeah. It falls outside of the, a portion of it falls outside of this exhibit. But yes, I think C2 is likely what that's going to be in the future.
So my only concern, Michael, is I thought that it just feels like we whittle away a little bit more because we have that 5 acres from game plan at the top.
Game point.
And then my thought was it was still going to be that smaller strip along there. I just get concerned because it was always been presented to us the big importance of maintaining large chunk of property for the auto mall. If we whittle away another 6 acres, that's another dealership. And so I guess I was just a little confused when I saw this. I felt like we're whittling away this large, you know, piece of
the auto mall
that we set aside for the auto mall.
And that's a question, like I said, with our economic development team, where they've been working closely with our current development partner on that. But I think that Heather is prepared to answer your question specifically on that. Like, if this rezone were to go through, how many auto mall dealers could we still potentially host at this site?
Okay.
I believe the number is around 6 is what I'm hearing, but maybe that's incorrect. Maybe Heather can speak to that.
Hi, Heather. Are you there in the virtual world out there somewhere?
That would really be my question as well. Is how much property does that leave in the AMSD zone, and what would that facilitate as far as what our plans are in that area?
What specifically is accomplished by making this change? Meaning, is there some particular development or prospect that cannot go forward because it's in the AMSD and it needs to be switched? I'm just trying to understand the why of this.
Yeah, because there's already 4 lots on the front that are already C2. Do we have 8 people that are ready to come in?
So this particular plat right here is a proposed plat. It has not been recorded. Lot 8, which is the upper right-hand corner of this exhibit, which is kind of this purplish color or bluish, that's where Garage Grill was trying to locate. Mm. So just to give you an idea, if we don't do this rezone, we're probably looking at 4 potential pad users.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if this rezone is done, this is indicating that we probably have 8 different pad users at this location.
There she is, the woman of the hour.
Ah.
So to be clear, on this exhibit, lots 3, 4, 7, and 8 could not go forward with any type of commercial development unless they're out of the AMSD.
Correct. Yeah, the AMSD is really exclusively written for auto dealers.
Got it.
I mean, they can have some ancillary uses associated directly with the dealer. It's not uncommon for a dealer perhaps to, you know, have some some obviously repair services are typically seen at dealers and things like that, but it has to be directly, you know, part of or connected to a dealership. So a restaurant, any other type of a parts dealer or something like that would have to be in a C2 zone.
Come on up, Heather.
I heard a question, but can you repeat what – I think it was Sherry's question.
Yeah, so I'm just concerned, obviously, if we whittle away more and more of the auto mall that we – you know, because initially it was really imperative that we have this large chunk of property so we can bring in like 8 dealerships. And if we shrink this down another 6 acres, that's saying that we're eliminating dealerships. So are we walking away a little bit from our auto mall, the potential of it? And I guess the timing on it a little bit, to me, it's like there's already 4 lots here that aren't, to my knowledge, aren't ready to be filled. So do we need to create 8? Or do you know what I'm saying?
So when we first started this project, we were working with James. James typically was a residential developer. So he knew we wanted commercial out front. He didn't know the depth that we needed. So he was kind of just, we're going to probably do 7 to 8 lots of commercial. So that has never changed. Once we brought on Larry and David, David works for Cole Years. He started, you know, laying stuff out for real, I should say. And so, and like Mike said previously, we've always shown this deeper. It didn't get zoned that way. I think we looked at this line to be a little bit flexible. And most of the dealerships we've talked to, other than, you know, 2 of your big ones, have said 5 to 7 acres is all they need. When we were first looking at it, we were like 10 acres probably for each dealer. So I think we're still fine as far as having enough of the zoning to do our dealership. It just... the way they have it laid out here, it just made more sense for the depth and for the uses that they're looking at.
And we know we have, again, there's a mention of one prospective, tenant on lot 8. Isn't there another one, another prospective tenant that's looking at one of those back lots currently as well?
Lot 3, isn't it, Mike?
Or
the car wash?
The car wash.
Is it lot 3?
Lot 1 or 3.
It seemed like I remembered that was one of the ones that was going to be maybe positioned in the back as well.
Yeah, they're already meeting with staff that car wash is, so they're already moving forward. we will have our partners here later if you'd like to speak to them about this zoning and ask them any questions as well.
But from your perspective, as you guys have moved through the discussions and how this potentially lays out with the commercial and the Carlets, potential dealership area, we're not, to Sherry's point, there's not a concern from those folks that we're sacrificing our abilities to bring in what we anticipated in the area by potentially moving this into the commercial zone.
No, and, you know, at this time, we're looking to Miller Crossing Drive. Eventually, we will go past Miller Crossing Drive for dealerships. And we even have the potential to move to the Anthem, 16 acres on the other side of Anthem. So I still think we're okay with our dealership zone.
Heather, as it is now, if we were to approve this change with Game Time chunk being gone, what is left actually in the auto zone? How many acres?
With what being gone? Sorry.
Game point.
Oh. Sorry, Game Point. I think we all get that name wrong. Game Point.
Game Time Point.
Because you're kind of whittling away. How many acres are left?
I can get you an exact number. If I had to guess off the top of my head right now, I would probably say 40.
That's it?
But that's a guess off the top of my head. I can look on our... on our GIS map and get you an exact number, though.
So that at 5 acres, that's 8 dealerships. At 7, that's even less. If we go to 40, we're down to 6.
So I guess my surprise at that is that when this was brought to us originally, it was we need our advantage over other areas like South Jordan that only had 40 to 50 acres was that we had a larger area. We could pledge 80 to even more, you know, at that point, we're talking 80 to 100 acres, and that all of these dealerships needed more room. You made the point that, you know, the 2 bigger ones maybe need 10, the rest of them 5 to 7. But if we paint ourselves into a corner too much, we lose them all.
Yeah, and again, it's your decision. I don't feel like we're painting ourselves into a corner. I think we have, you know, the property to the north in Anthem if we needed to. We have property to the east. Where the Maverick is, that's commercial zone. We could move that direction. We have Ken Olson's property to the west. That's another 8 acres, I believe. So I think there's still room to move if we have all this interest that we want for the dealership. I still think there's room to move and have the potential to have up to, 8 to 10 dealerships. But
the dealership all want that frontage on Mountain View. That's the
they want the what? The Mountain View, is that what you said?
The frontage, I think, is what he said there.
Yeah, I think you're big dealers, but that along Mountain View will be a higher price tag. So I think you'll get, they're going to cluster. It's going to be, you have the big one, the others will come around. I know it looks like, why are we doing this? But if you look at this map, I mean, we've always needed some depth there. It's unfortunate that this wasn't platted prior to the zone, so we already could have planned for this, but it was not.
Well, and to your point, Heather, the other, I guess, concern that I have in making an area successful is just that you have enough space to allow the synergy of that area to happen and build off each other. And again, I reference really down north of here, down off of Anthem, mm-hmm. around JCWs and Les Schwab and what's happening over there and the depth that exists there and how that synergy has fed off of itself. And I want to make sure that we allow for that in this area as well. And so, again, the same concerns that are being shared on, are we taking too much away from the automotive zone? But again, to allow this area in the commercial zone and the potential retail that comes in that area, I want to make sure that synergy is allowed to happen there. And can that happen with just 4 lots along the frontage? Maybe, maybe not. I think that's a balancing question that we all have to kind of wrestle with.
And I know that the developers have been talking to different users that could possibly take up a larger chunk of acreage in this C2 zone. So they do like that flexibility, have a little bit more acreage.
Cool.
Okay. And you said that the other landowner is going to be here a little bit later, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we could ask a few more questions on
yes.
that. Okay.
Thanks, Heather.
Thank
we
you.
Just really wanted to see your face, so thanks for coming in.
If I may, I was just looking at the GIS map in response to your questions. And because much of our zoning actually, and you can see it in this exhibit, actually spills out into the right-of-way, I think in order to get you a more accurate map, we're going to have to do some additional calculations. But it does look like the potential area, I think, is closer to 60 acres, Heather. But we'll have to analyze that and prepare that for you at our next meeting.
Perfect.
Perhaps we could even create a new conceptual plan as far as how these dealerships would lay out if this were to change. I haven't asked that before, but maybe that's something that we could
and
prepare.
And your comment there.
Okay.
And your comment of 60 acres that you just made, was that after potentially taking?
Yeah, I already had made a few deductions. There's also a couple of parcels that still haven't received the AMSD zone because we don't control them
yet.
We
don't control them yet.
Yeah. But we'll give you a better picture of what
that
looks
that's
like.
That's the number that sticks closer into my head is kind of what we were going for was around
right.
the 60 acres there. So that does make a little more sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I share all the same concerns, but hearing that number, especially if we can just nail it down a little bit more specifically, and then if we could also maybe possibly get the potential of what we could expand into in the future, just so that we know that we have that possible option in the future, not that it's saying that that will ever happen, but just so that we can kind of have those better numbers for us as we understand. Personally, I think I agree with Councilman Smith here as well. We got to make sure that we give that opportunity for that commercial to be successful. And frankly, I think that it just makes any commercial that we have there just makes that even more appealing to those dealerships, because they don't want to be out in a hole in the middle of nowhere. They want to have things around them. So I don't see any reason why that wouldn't be a benefit to that area, especially when it's for something specific that our residents have been asking for a very, very long time. So personally, I don't see too much of a problem with it, as long as we can get some of those more specific numbers and know kind of where we really are before we make that change.
Would you like this on for discussion and action on your next agenda, or discussion only?
I'd be fine with that.
everybody knows that a car buying process is a long process. You got to have food in the area. You got to have maybe even a hotel, you know, daycare.
Right.
I do love the idea of just like another little layout that would just say, yeah, okay, if there were 7 acres, this is all would fit, that kind of stuff. It would be helpful just to visualize that a little bit more.
I think
thank
we'd
you
be comfortable with discussion and possible action.
Yeah.
Thank you.
A therapist in the area might be good too.
Yes. Marriage counselor. All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. We will go ahead and move on to item 2.3, alternate planning commission reappointments.
Okay. We have two current alternates whose terms expire this month, and I have asked both of them if they are interested in being reappointed, and they are. I included some information in your packet as far as their attendance and participation. One thing to be aware of is that there was a note in there of how many times an alternate member participated in a voting role. And that's not to reflect when they were available. It's when they were invited to participate because there was, of course, a vacancy by a regular member. Joy, our alternate, had some conflicts with work over last summer that she was unanticipated, and that had reduced her participation. She has informed me that she believes that that situation has been resolved and that she has been more recently been attending more regularly. You can see Heather actually had, our records had her down for 100% attendance.
Yes,
I think she might have missed one, but that's what we had indicated when I had requested a copy from our recorder's office.
Awesome.
We also have Colby Oliverson, you may recall, moved out of the city several months ago. And I'm asking the council if you would like to direct staff to start the process of filling that third alternate vacancy. It's not required, but we can have up to 3 alternates. I think since Colby left, we did have one meeting where we were a little close on attendance, so it might make sense to go ahead and fill that alternate if the council would like us to do that. And, of course, that would come back for you for a vote.
I love filling it just simply because it allows them to learn for a long time, too, you know what I mean, even though you're not required, but it allows an extra person that learning curve, too.
Right. Again, commissioners serve for 3 years, alternates serve for 1 year, and they're always up for potential reappointment by the city council.
Yeah, I also agree, and I think that also anytime we can give members of the community a chance to be actively participating in the growth of our city is a fantastic way to bring in diversity and bring in, you know, different ideas. And so I'm absolutely happy to direct staff to fill that particular position.
I agree with both, and I'd support that effort, finding that appointment.
Okay. We'll prepare, at the council's direction, we'll prepare the two names for reappointment.
Please.
And then we'll prepare, we'll start the process of seeking a third.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right. With that, we'll move on to item 2.4, Assistant City Manager Updates. Brett Wood. Yeah, you. But I was told you had nothing, and so I don't want to hear you too much.
I'm over to Tammy talking about graduation coming up and asking the council if they want to attend and so we can plan for that because, sorry, Steve, I know you're going to one graduation and you're going to be locked down for about 7 hours, but go ahead, Tammy.
Would you mind coming to the microphone?
However, if you do, you should know that it will probably last like 7 hours.
Which one?
Can we drive faster?
Can we be at the front?
So getting you in and out would be a challenge. They could do it if you needed to leave earlier or arrive later, but it would
and
be
remind,
a challenge.
Remind us of the day and time, please.
June 4th.
So June 4th, I don't
want to
get usually.
I know.
He has an extra microphone right here.
So June 4th, we'll do Harrison High School first. I believe our stage point is, do you have a thing on this?
Have Wendy come talk.
Wendy, come up here then.
You can pull out the extra microphone.
Sorry,
it's totally
on
okay.
My cheat sheet. So.
Yes, and we do know where we would like to.
So, Harriman High School will be staging at 10129 South, just behind the Rec Center in Silvercrest Elementary. That's where the initial staging will be. We plan on inviting you, if you're available, to come to the high school, which is where the administration will be. We do have gifts for all of the seniors. We have a keychain that says congratulations, class of 2020, and it has the Harriman City logo and then all of the Harriman High Schools on it. So we'd like you to be present at Harriman High School to hand those out to each vehicle, each senior, graduating senior. Mountain Ridge High School is also having their parade on the same day. They will go from RSL to Mountain Ridge High School, so a little bit easier route. Again, we'd like council members at the end of the route at the high school to pass out those gifts. As far as the times go, we're starting staging at Harriman High at 9 a.m.
No, or 129th
at 9 a.m. And so that will be a long day. Mountain Ridge will go a little bit faster. So we can, if you're available, we'll send you an email to get some specifics.
What time do you anticipate needing us in place at the high school if we were to try and attend?
At Mountain Ridge or at Harriman?
At Harriman.
At probably 9.
I would say be
nine.
Over there at 9. And the reason I think that's a better place for you all, and you'll thank for me this later, is we have a lot of parking over there, and you can get in and out as you need to come and go. So it'll be 5 to 6, maybe 7 hours. So if you want to go and need to do other stuff and want to come back, we can get you right there by the command post. We'll have facilities and water and that kind of stuff there. So you're not going to want to be at the stage point or pre-stage.
And we will have
won't be fun.
Probably Brett or Tammy at Harriman High since they're B team. We've split into A and B teams at each school. A team will be over at Mountain Ridge. So B team gets the long shift.
What time is Mountain Ridge?
Could we rotate it? Could we each do a shift?
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's important that...
Yep. That we're there. I'm happy that
there's some representation from the city. Obviously, this is a big deal, right? But to ask any one of us to sit there for 5 to 7 hours is a long
yep. It's going to be a long day.
We're asking for that, too.
I don't care about that.
If you're not available at either school, we'll have staff there to be able to pass
right.
What time is Mountain Ridge scheduled for? 2?
Yeah, I think they'll start pre-stage at 1. They'll be at presentation point at 2, which is at the school, when we'll have a command post there, too, so that you could have some ability to post up there. I think that's the best spot.
So
then
I'm thinking
you can go back and forth.
If we each did 90 minutes, that would cover 6 hours.
Yeah, I do think, and Wendy, Tammy, I do think that Harriman will probably still be going when we launch Mountain Ridge. So that should be interesting how we split the police. And you'll hit us on the route, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's would be my best suggestion for where you should go.
I mean, I'm certainly
can,
happy to help.
Can
87 and sunny. I was just looking
at I can dedicate a block of time to be at 1.
Absolutely.
Mine might be a little easier, a little bit later. So potentially the Mountain Ridge one might work better for my schedule for me, but certainly can.
Do we want to send out a schedule?
You know how like on town days, you always have those little schedules that we could fill out that. Can you just send a schedule and we can just sign up for a block that we could do?
That's easy to do.
I'd really like to do that.
Last bit of the Harriman side, I have somebody I'd like to make sure I hand one to.
Really?
So we're staging.
And Chuck.
Yeah, something like that.
Best laid plans, right?
Good riddance. I mean, something like that.
Jared, do you have anything to comment on this one?
No, I second Steve's motion.
I don't know what he said.
I have no idea what he just said.
I think he just volunteered.
Oh, he seconded Steve. Well. Okay.
Best laid plans.
Nominate Steve.
Yeah, that's true.
Second in promotion.
We should be. We're trying to launch 4 groups of 130 cars, an hour and 15 to half an hour apart. So, like I said, best laid plans. This is literally a Fort Harriman's launch every hour and a half to get this done. Fort Harriman Days Parade.
Just remember what she said, 5, 6, or 7 hours.
Yeah.
I think it's been 7.
Oh, yeah.
There will be lots of honking and air horns, so. It'll be fun.
Will you make sure air plugs are available?
Right. It'll be a good
one. You know what that?
Yeah, I like the idea of just splitting up and that way somebody's there
for a while. Yeah, we rotate and then pick up at Mountain View or the other high school.
Like I said, the long was definitely going to be Harriman High for sure.
Yeah, we're expecting there's 800,
how many graduating at
830 at Harriman High. I think it's 830
870, and we're expecting, we hope ran it around 750 kids is all. But I don't think everybody will be there, but we're getting, after seeing the other schools, I'm thinking that almost nearly all of them will come. Mountain Ridge is much less. What's that?
I think it's 220.
Is that the 220? Yeah, so 220. RSL and Providence Hall went excellent. So we're basing a lot of our faith on that because it's the same people.
Like I said, I think the longest portion of the day obviously is going to be Harriman because of the number of students. And then
largest graduating class in Utah.
Of course. Yep. We're proud of it.
Yep. We graduate a lot of kids. So, and then we'll do the route.
Can tell you a little bit about the route. The route at Mountain Ridge is much easier. It's just down County Parkway, Sentinel Ridge to the high school. It's very simple. Both routes will be hard closed. So keep that in mind.
Have we started noticing that to the public?
Travel through the city. They've just...
There's a little bit longer story behind that. We've been helping we've been helping the school along as much as we can to get it.
We love being a partner with the school.
We do love to be a partner with them.
Good job being a partner with the school.
We reassured them that Wendy does this for a living, so just listen.
Well, it's really been Cody and Brian that have been working with the school. So.
This is where the SRO program has paid off. Like, we've had a great contact there.
So, Harriman High School's route is a little more complicated. So, they're going to start at 129th South, just behind the rec center in Silvercrest, turn right onto 5600 West, and then turn left onto Harriman Boulevard, and then right onto 60th, and then pull into the parking lot.
Correct. And we'll go two wide on 60th and three wide into the school. So, as you're at the school, you'll have three presentation points going simultaneously. And we still think we'll back up. The reason we did a hard closure is because we know we'll back up, and we have a lot of young drivers and family members and people probably doing a lot of things besides driving on that route. So we thought it'd be good to just close it down and let
a lot of people running up to cars and, you know, doing things
so
they shouldn't be doing.
Be lined basically with people.
We think that, originally under red and orange, we couldn't allow them to line the streets because it would have been too close. But when we went to yellow, they can do it. And so we tell the families, go stand on the route. And again, we thought the hard closure would be best because if we do have somebody run out to a car and say hi, they don't get hit by a car going the other way. So
yes.
It's just safer to do hard closure. It's not going to be fun. We're going to have mad citizens over that.
Do those things not work well when they come in contact at high speed?
Motion, size, all those things come into
play. Equals MC.
I'll defer to the first responder over there.
He with the most lug nuts wins.
Yep.
Yeah, would you guys help us put together like a schedule?
Yeah.
I think probably 90 minutes each or
something like that.
An hour 45 each at Harriman, and then we can rotate over. And
earlier is better for me, so I'm happy to take that first shift.
Yeah, and later is better for me. So.
Okay.
I think the time limit is actually realistic because when you think about our own Town Days parade, it lasts about 3 hours, about 130 entries.
Well, we've done better because we've made people
just
ride
saying,
cars
it just
and
gives
walk.
It a realistic idea that it's going to be long.
We won't have walkers as we do in a parade, but we'll have people approaching cars and cars.
Wait, you
won't
have people campaigning for office? We've never done that.
Right?
You never know.
That always slows it down. So, but I think this is going to be a fantastic event. The kids are going to love it. It really will go well.
Awesome. Got me to do the rest while I'm here?
Do the rest while you're there.
Okay.
All of it.
Tammy sent you all an email, I believe, last week about our recommendation to cancel Fort Harriman Town Days. That was a really hard decision for staff to make. It just is not the same. It's not the same expectation that people would have with Town Days. We are still going to do a lot of events, either virtually or those events that we can have people register for and socially distance. So we'll still do things. It's just not going to be the same. So our recommendation is to cancel Town Days for this year. If I have any questions about that.
Tough decision, but I think it's the right move.
None of us want to say it, so we're glad that you did.
I know. I'm about to cry.
can we just have the party crashers come and have a big party, like, when we get back to semi-normal? Like, bring them out here at the park and put them on the pavilion and just go crazy. And those guys are so much fun.
We do have future dates available with them.
Okay.
So we're talking through that, and we'll kind of see how the state progresses in their risk categories and what we're able to do. But they're very open coming back in July or August for our back-to-school stuff. So,
sweet.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So not all is lost. We'll still figure out a way to do the party crashers. As you also probably know, Black Ridge Reservoir and the Splash Pads opened on Friday.
How did that go?
It went fantastic.
Good.
The weather helped a little bit because it was nice and chilly. But we had almost 2,100 visitors over the weekend to Black Ridge. And we do have staff there asking questions when people arrive. You know, what are you here doing? Are you just doing the trails? Are you on the beach? You know, what is your activity here? They're asking for their zip codes so we can figure out how many are really Harriman residents. Over the weekend, it was about 45% Harriman residents and 55% non-residents that visited. I haven't broken down the zip codes yet, but my guess is a lot of those are Riverton, Bluffdale, South Jordan residents. So we'll get a more formal report to you at the June 10th meeting when we see how things go this weekend when it's 100 degrees outside.
Yeah.
What else on Black? It was beautiful. I was up there every day and it went really well. So our staff have done a really good job putting a plan together and executing that plan. Memorial Day, hopefully you all were able to stream our Memorial Day ceremony. Big thanks to John for being there and taking care of that. And also for recording the veterans' names with Bobby. That was great. It's always great to have Bobby DeLuca read those names. It's a big tradition and we love having him do that. The cemetery looked great, as always. Hopefully, I don't know if you all made it out to see the cemetery on Memorial Day, but it's always beautiful. So, big thanks to our park staff for getting that all ready to go. We have the fireworks salute on Saturday. I'm still in a nervous space about it because I don't know.
I wanted to talk about this.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
And Chief and I have talked about it a little bit. We're both still very concerned about it. I've not received a response from Eric on a Plan C, so... go ahead and ask me your questions or concerns.
Well, I just appreciated one being looped into the email that came out the other day that was talking specifically about that, because I think obviously, though we want to have something in some way to celebrate, obviously faced with the hottest temperatures of the year, essentially, potentially, the equivalent of a red flag warning day. And shooting fireworks off near our foothills concerns me greatly. And so again, I think as a council, we need to be aware of the conditions that are going to potentially exist and be able to at least express our thoughts on the matter. Again, everyone's looking for something to celebrate and a reason to, you know, kind of move past the pandemic. But again, I think at what cost are we willing to do that? And knowing, you know, the size of shells that they want to shoot, and I'm not exactly sure what they're planning on shooting out of the Butterfield Park, whether they're six or eights out here. Those are larger than we usually do just for our own town day celebrations. And like I say, I have a concern, obviously, with what the forecast looks like. I know that there's supposed to be some gusty south winds that day. And I think we need to have a plan that that really looks very closely at the forecast and makes really probably a determination, not just hours before the event, but potentially a day or two before the event of what is the best call to make, so that we're not, again, it's a good event, but it's just that event. It's not tied to our Harriman Days or anything else like that. So I don't think that we need to push this any further than is really reasonable to make a determination of whether we feel like it's prudent or not to proceed with the event. And I know I can speak for at least one other city that they have the same concerns there. I think the discussion that needs to happen from probably the staff level is with the other cities and expressing that concern and really get a determination of if one pulls, does that mean they're all going to pull, or does that mean it just pulls one out? Because again, the scope of the event certainly goes off much better if all go at the same time and they get that south end event like they wanted. If one just pulls, but the others choose to proceed, obviously that starts to fragment it. Again, I just have some concerns with what I'm seeing as far as the weather this weekend and what challenges that may present. And again, I don't think, again, because it's just that event, it's not tied to our town days or anything else, there really is no reason for us to push it and to wait till the 11th hour to say we don't think it's a good choice for this weekend based on the forecast we're seeing, and maybe look for a time to reschedule that. So that's my thoughts.
I agree. I just want to make a comment. I applaud Wendy for being on top of this because she wants to be, you know, she likes celebrations. But they are talking about 10-inch shales out of Butterfield Park. and we get the southwest wind during the day at 40 miles an hour. But typically, even machine gun fire, you remember those years, at 10 o'clock or in late evening, it shifted and came out of the north. Mm-hmm. That blows the shells back on the mountain. So I agree with what Wendy's been pushing out, showing us big concern to the supplier. We need to be very cautious. We don't want to end up in fire and burn homes. And so we're going to watch this. And I agree with what Clint has to say, that if it looks like the wind patterns are consistent, what we know our history is, then we can do it another time. And you already know it's drying out. 100-day weather, degree weather Saturday, and then 40-mile-an-hour winds southwest, and they'll change. They do change. It actually helped us in machine gun fire because it blew the fire back on itself. But if we're launching a fire at that point, it's going to blow it back on the mountain.
Really the only potential difference of the weather conditions we see on that day versus the day of the machine gun fire is that it's earlier in the season where the fields haven't had a chance to dry out as much as in September. However, we've had a very dry spring already up to this point, and they're drying out quickly. And now if we have a couple very warm days heading into that, it's going to dry them out even more. And again, I don't think any of us want to experience what we have in the past out here. So
the other thing that I think is hard for other cities to recognize is that the winds bounce around different out here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just like Brett was saying, at town days, I think it was last year or the year before, I mean, we were last minute to be able to launch because the winds shifted on us so fast. So I don't know. It's something that worries me, and we'll keep you updated on what's happening with that in our conversations.
We have more interface here too, wildland interface. So, you know, some of the cities. So the danger is just much more escalated here.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I know I've said dozens, if not hundreds of times, is that our priority here as a council is public safety. And as much as we would like to do a wonderful activity for everybody to enjoy during this particularly stressful time, I don't want to, and I don't think any member of this council wants to put any of our residents in danger of losing property or even possibly somebody losing their life. It's not worth that kind of risk. So I am 100% agreement with Councilman Smith over there, and I think that I'm going to leave it up to staff to make that call. I will support staff with whatever call they make, because I'm not the expert on that, and so I would defer to them and fully support whatever decision is made to make that to make that call.
I have UFA is also, we've been talking to them a lot, so they're a little bit nervous too. So we'll keep updating you on that. Our contract does allow us to use them another time, so maybe later in the summer, like Party Crashers. We do have that option. So if we do have to cancel,
Party Crashers with 8-inch fireworks.
This sounds like this is the plans coming together.
Some different news that's really exciting for me, because it's something I'm very passionate about. Some of you may or may not know that my background is really in aging services. It's one of my master's degrees is in gerontology. And so I have a special place in my heart for our senior citizens. I'm going to cry again. So Wendy Hill is a resident that lives here in Harriman, and she reached out to me a couple weeks ago and asked if Harriman City Hall would be a transfer station for Meals on Wheels. And so we talked about it and talked about what they needed, and I did have experience with Meals on Wheels in my previous job. And so for those of you that don't know what Meals on Wheels is, I assume you do, but you may not. It's a meal program provided by Salt Lake County through the Older Americans Act that provides meals to homebound seniors. So it's really important. And not only does it provide a meal, it provides a visit. So that's really important, especially right now. Our program will start on Monday. So we will have 11 homebound seniors that we will serve by volunteers. And so I'm really excited about that. So
I know, Wendy, one of the, trying to remember what meeting it was I attended, I believe it was Calm, actually a few months ago, prior to the whole pandemic. And we had a presentation from Salt Lake County Aging Services, and they spoke specifically about Meals on Wheels, and obviously the service it provides, a very important service. One of the things they were looking to do at the time, and of course had to back off of that, is trying to get some of the elected officials in the areas actually to
help participate in some of those deliveries and to help, obviously it helps educate them about the program and, but it's an opportunity to be a little bit more visible and engaged in your community as well. But as we move obviously further down the road past this, it's something that I was interested in doing then. I think I would love to look at that possibility down the road, since we have a transfer station now here and of being able to, you know, hook up with them and to maybe do a few of those deliveries with them. I think it would be a great experience. Thank you.
I would also like to comment on how things trickle down from a really awesome mother, Wendy Hill, to a really awesome youth council at Alexandra Hill. That would be his mother. So,
yeah, I agree.
So great, great, great members family of our community for sure.
Yeah, we're going to do a spotlight on her in one of our newsletters.
Okay.
So, just talking about the program. So
nice.
Anything else for me?
No, we just want to get you emotional a little bit more. Thank you, Wendy.
More items to talk about. Dr. Weidner showed up. Is he? I can't see him because of the podium. I nicknamed him Dr. Weidner because he was going to become a doctor. You know that story a little bit, but he's been phenomenal about making sure we have the right supplies and in-depth knowledge. We talked about that last council meeting as well, but I was watching him sanitize his hands in the back room. I thought, yeah, he's getting ready for surgery. So
as you all know, we took an early and active role in prevention of spreading the COVID amongst public safety, right? And part of that is due to Brian. And Brian's family has a huge background in epidemiology, and he's just a really smart guy. So he went and studied all these other agencies. One of them was Salt Lake City, and they use UV light, right? We were wiping everything down, and we went and bought a bunch of stuff to wipe stuff down, but it was damaging our equipment, it was damaging our vests and belts. So we started to look into this, into the UV lighting system, and we had a medical company bring out these UV lights to us. They're expensive lights, and we put them in the room, and I've explained how that works, right, and we cook it. And they're extremely dangerous, and the fire department uses them, and as I understand it, in like their housing units to cook off the bacteria. We've done it in offices. It's really strange. It smells different depending on what bacteria happens to be in that room that it's killing. And you can't be in the room because it will kill you, or at least it will make you extremely sick. I'm not kidding. These are like big lights, right? And they're shadowing, and there's a lot of other things you have to understand about it that I don't, but he does. So I'm going to turn the time over to Brian, because last meeting you asked if you could hear more about this UV lighting system. So, Brian, go ahead.
I apologize for not being in the correct uniform for council meeting. And I'm not really a doctor. I just play one in the police department. I'll try and answer your question.
Did you stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night?
Or a La Quinta. Either one.
That's just for the waffles.
That's right, yeah.
I did bring that poster because I think it helps to kind of see what we're talking about, and I can move it so that you can see it.
And that is our room, by the way.
Yeah.
You want me to hold it up?
Six feet, Chief.
That's right. I'll stay out here. So this is the mask that we actually mark. You can see the date on it, and he'll explain how that works. And that is you in the suit, right, in your Tyvek? And that is the room that we operate in, and that is a system that hangs it up. Those are the big UV light towers, they call them. Interestingly enough, and they do it with fire trucks, as I understand, the base comes off of those, and if we have a police car that's contaminated, we set it inside the car. So we don't have to wipe it down and pay $1,000 to get a car cleaned. You stick it in there to clean it. And then at the end is the room when it's actually being and these were strong enough that they did some testing with them in this room for us, because they were interested as well with some tape that reacts to UV light, and I'll let you talk more about that.
Would you like to ask questions, or should I hit a couple bullet points?
Yeah, I'd like to say operate, so we already know, doctor, operate, we are just...
That's all. I appreciate the generosity, but that's way over my head, all the praise. So when this started, we scrambled like everybody, and looked at PPE and masks and how were we going to keep our officers safe on the street. And I had an interesting phone call with a PhD candidate up at the U who's a police officer at Salt Lake City. And he described the process that they were setting up, and they were trying to acquire these UV lights, the UVC spectrum, so a certain spectrum of UV light that does kill all kinds of pathogens, including... from recent studies, including coronavirus. And so we started, the chief and I looked, and we
tried to find a place where we might be able to purchase some UV light. And it's either very small and inefficient and probably not worthy of what we're trying to do, or very expensive. But Johnson Medical out of Lehigh, with a phone call, said, hey, yeah, we'll bring them up this afternoon. I had no idea what they were talking about. So they showed up with these two units. We set them up in the room across from the community room where the tables used to be stored. And we built a PVC BA, built us a PVC rack, and we could hang our masks. And the research shows that after about 6 minutes, 99.9% of coronavirus is killed by UV light. So as we set this up and started processing our masks, and I took the information from this officer at Salt Lake City and kind of translated it into the process we were going to use to clean masks, this Johnson Medical became interested, and they came up and they filmed what we were doing and were fascinated. So it was kind of fun to get going. But yeah, the UV light, it can be used, as the chief said. They're using it in life flight type helicopters that are designated for COVID transports, in ambulances. They're designed originally to be used in surgical rooms in hospitals. As the chief said, we set it up in the room, and the Johnson Medical folks put these test strips that would measure the density or the intensity of the UV light, and they set one behind a chair. So if the emitter was right here, it would be as if where the chief is sitting behind his chair, they set one of these plastic strips, and it was about 4 inches from the wall. And we ran, when you turn these units on, they have a motion sensor, so if there's any movement in the room, they shut off automatically because they're damaging to eyes and to skin. As they turned it on, and it measures the room reflectivity and decides how long it needs to run to be able to saturate the room. And so it ran about 15 minutes. After about six, they said, we're probably good with our masks. But we walked in and looked at the test strip, and it was completely saturated. They're on a blue scale from baby blue to very dark blue, and it was completely black. So it was impressive. Let's see. A couple of things that I thought might be of interest. So in terms of maintenance, there is no maintenance, but the bulbs last. They have about a 5 to 7 year life. They're 12 bulbs per unit, and they're $340 per bulb, so it's about $4,000 per unit to keep them running beyond 5 to 7 years. Let's see, they won't damage, according to Johnson Medical, they don't damage typical furniture or wall coverings. They don't damage leather, won't fade your wood. In my mind as a woodworker, I don't believe that. I think if you used it enough over a long period of time, you'd fade wood, but whatever. They said that it won't damage furniture. They have noticed that in cheap white plastic, it will cause the plastic to kind of yellow over time. That's really the gist of it. It allows us a couple of things that are important for the police department. One is to be able to, we've issued masks, and you see in one of those photos that each officer has 5 masks. They'll wear one per shift. It has their name, a number on it, a date on it. The end of their shift, they put it in a paper bag, they put it in a bin, and then we'll process those once a week or depending on the need. Then we move them from the dirty bin to the clean bin, and they can use them again. So their 5 masks that they're rotating through should last quite a while, a month or more. So that helps us to preserve or to be able to make our PPE last longer. And then also the potential, if you can imagine, if we had to arrest or we put someone in a car and then later found out they were COVID positive, you can imagine what it would be like to clean or have to disinfect, sanitize that car would be difficult. So being able to place this light source in a vehicle and disinfect the vehicle is a big bonus for us as well. And then, of course, there's potential to move it around the city building and put it in rooms to disinfect the rooms.
Couple quick questions.
Sure.
How many times can you disinfect, or have you set a limit on how many times you can disinfect each mask before you rotate them out?
So the study that Nebraska did in March, I think, they said to do 5 times, because in their experience, at about 5 times, the mask starts to lose its structural integrity, so it doesn't really seal as well. So that's what we've been doing about five times. But there are other groups that are online that have posted videos, hospitals that are processing masks, and they'll do more than five times. But so you could really keep going until the mask no longer seals well, until the elastic starts to fall apart.
And my next question is just how expensive are the units to run? Meaning, is there significant power consumption by running these units? Obviously, it's prolonging PPE so hard to come by. It's certainly it's worth it, but is there an estimate on cost of what it actually takes to run these units? And the follow-up question is that why every couple of days my power dims for a few minutes and then comes back up?
Yeah, I don't know the answer.
Are they just running off of a normal 110 circuit, or are they running?
No.
We were reading that, and it's not going to be that much either, but. Third 5 to 7 years in hospitals. One of the things I'm really proud of is that about it. We know that we've been exposed
probably, I think we have 3 times that we know we've been exposed to guaranteed COVID, and we have not had anybody in our police department get COVID, not one. So we're really proud of the way we've set these guys up and trained them and make them wear their masks. They don't like wearing them, but we make them wear them. So at any rate, we think this has a lot to do with our ability to sustain PPE. And again, you know how I am. I think coming this winter, we're going to have a whole other PPE shortage. Things are going to get upside down on us again. And we struggle to get PPE in. And this way is another form to do that. But did that answer your question on power consumption?
But what I'm hearing is that if we have somebody exposed, we can't just put them in the room and turn them on. That's a no-go.
So we were warned by them very specifically that it is bad. It's very bad.
Did we actually purchase these units?
No,
or were
we have not.
Renting
nope.
them?
Nope. They basically said, listen, as a public safety service, we'll let you check them out. Of course, they came back with, to buy them, I'm going to give you some sticker shock. It's about $35,000 a unit.
So we're looking at 2 units?
Yeah, but they came back and said, hey.
Not surprised by that at all.
They came back and hooked us up. They said, look.
They deal on these used units?
Yeah, right. Yes, they will.
They're a demo unit.
They're going to give us a quote, or they did give us a quote, and I apologize for
on the 2 that's just over $50,000.
Yeah,
so, and they are demos.
Yeah.
They sell for quite a bit more than that to the hospitals.
Yeah, so I mean, it would be an advantage for what's going to be our future for the foreseeable future to have something like this. We also see it as an advantage to our partners in the area that may need it. We've offered like South Jordan and Riverton, if they run low on masks, their officer could come up and we'll cleanse their masks for them. So I think it's an advantage.
In the past that this actually has application beyond just PPE masks. You can actually use it for if an officer is exposed, it can disinfect their equipment,
right.
Vests, all that kind of stuff, right?
So we have a decontamination trailer outside where the officers go through, again, a system that Brian set up. It's very specific stationing they go through, and they clean their stuff. But we know, and the stuff they wear is very expensive, we know that if we continue to wipe it down with Clorox and stuff, it's going to start to damage it. So we're trying to get away from that. We just did some testing on a vest to see that it wouldn't damage it. It didn't. So we feel confident about that. For instance, yesterday, I'm searching for the...
How do you know it didn't?
What's that?
How do you know it didn't
damage it? Well, we picked
it
up and pulled on it. It seemed to work.
They tested it?
And when I say vest, I mean the carrier they have, their load-bearing vest, the LBVs. So it didn't damage the fabrics to it. And we knew that would... We know Salt Lake City...
Not, you didn't put it in there with the plates in it, though, just the exterior.
No.
Fabric.
Yeah, the plates were taken out of it, just the exterior. And we wouldn't put plates in it. We'd wipe those down. Because with those vests, we're very... We worry that they stay in good shape, right?
Absolutely.
One of the schools yesterday, and I'm searching for, was it Copper Mountain? Or I'm not Copper Mountain. Copper Hills Middle School was infected, right? They had a person come in. They later find out they have COVID. So guess what? They wiped everything down, right? What we would do in this building, if somebody comes in tomorrow and we find out, we roll those through, set it up, let it burn the station, set it up, let it burn the station, and move through, and we're done. Probably in an hour or two. We could have a place disinfected. We also would use them for police cars.
Awesome.
all those other things. But and what brought this up is when we were talking about the kits and what our future looks like. Does this fit our future? And again, the company's letting us use them for free. They just wanted to see how it would work with public safety. And of course, their buy-in to that is, hey, if we can get public safety to reuse their masks, we have a new market, right?
Yep. So not to bring up bad memories here, but we had an incident where we thought there might have been exposure to a biological agent or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And if something like that happened, trying to decontaminate this place would be insane, right? So being able to use those for something like that, I'm just saying that this has great application in a lot of different things and could be a great use to the city.
Right.
And our partners.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons,
just fantastic.
One of the reasons our movement is restricted in this building right now is for that very reason. If we get somebody comes in with COVID and they walk all over the building, that's a lot of work. So we're trying to, knock down the areas that they can walk.
How long are our wonderful partners at Johnson Medical going to allow us to continue to utilize their building?
I don't know.
So
it's helping them with their study. So who knows? Well,
yeah. So, let's hold off for the longer. The longer they're a demo unit, that price is going to keep it up.
The more miles we put on it. They did say, they said, look, if we have another public safety agency come, we have to be fair. And
so if somebody else comes and asks, then we need to pay for them. Okay.
Yeah.
What was their number again?
But I think we've made it clear to our regional partners that we've set up. The lighting's only one part of the system. The training behind it that he's already engaged in with him and Lance, right? You and Lance, and the systems we set up for that's a whole other piece to this.
Absolutely.
So, nice. So how? I mean, we're talking about COVID a lot, but I mean, is this literally like basically any biological pathogen this can take out?
I think they use it to clean hospital rooms.
Molds, bacteria, viruses. Yeah, there's a whole spectrum of pathogens that it will kill or denature. So
it's interesting, in the hospitals you'll see them, they're actually on a robotic stand and they're programmed to drive around once the rooms are empty and they go in there and clean them, and then if there's movement it shuts off and that kind of stuff. But
it's also interesting that when we first researched this two and a half months ago, there was not a lot available commercial or to the public, just to hospitals, but now if you look, there are units for residential use, and yes, it's the market is reacting.
So we're just going to kind of keep doing what we're doing. And
my two cents on this is that I'm just not quite sure. I think we need to test it out a little bit longer. but I'm open to the idea of purchasing them when the time comes.
Yeah, and if you guys are interested to see the room, Ryan can take you down there and check it out.
So, and to your point, I know that there's been several other entities throughout the Valley who have actually tried to make made their own on obviously a very small scale to be able to do a couple of masks at a time and those things, because again, of the prospect of what we're faced with long term here.
Right. And the feds were handing out what they call the box, and the box is just a smaller, very small version. And then there's some question about the shadowing inside the box, whether it's even intense enough. And we decided to not do that and put somebody at risk. If we were going to do it, we're going to do it right. And
Absolutely. The
advantage we have is we have Brian, and a lot of other agencies don't have. We in Salt Lake City have a guy like Brian. So,
I would. Does the council have any concerns with this process and the path that our officers are going down in this particular instance?
Good job,
Jared. Do you have any comments on this one?
HPD is awesome. Keep it up.
And to kind of reiterate, the reason we started looking at this, and it's part of the conversation, was we were looking at the antibody testing. If we spend money, what should it be on, and what's the best? What are our best options? And I am fearful this is with us for a couple of years, and we're just going to be living in this. What Sherry said, the new now, not the new normal, but the new now
the
for
new
a while.
Yeah.
So once we get a vaccine.
We're in a science fiction movie. Let's use science fiction. This is great.
It looks like science fiction. So thank you. If you have any questions.
I think Jared was worried we were going to volunteer him to actually try it out tonight. That's why he didn't show up.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a couple more things I'd like to go over. One we've been talking about, that do we end up purchasing at the end of the day? Do we have money to do that? I like the new now or the old new. We're not going back to the way things were. But we're going to try to get close to that. And what does that mean? What we have to prepare for? We're using our community room to have this set up. And at some point, we'll get back to needing that. So the future may need, we may have to have a UV room. That's all it's designated for, to decontaminate things in the future. So we're trying to think out of the box what this will mean in the future and stay on top of it, like we've done so many different things and work our different schedules. This is a new process now. We're bringing council in, but we're keeping our social distancing or physical distancing. And Troy reminds us every time that those little droplets are 12 minutes in the air and don't get close to me, and a little bit germophobic, but he's actually keep on warning us about what we need to be doing. But our whole team, I was watching, it's really rewarding to me to watch the emotions our people put into their jobs. Wendy got very emotional on several items tonight, and she is, I'm glad she loves seniors because I'm there. It's just rewarding that there's so much buy-in to what's going on in our community by your team, and I can't tell them thanks enough. Another piece of that is we have our general meeting coming up, but this is Chase Andresi's first meeting. So I don't know where the camera is on him or wave to the crowd.
Not to cut you off, but just one question I had, or back on those UV towers.
You're going to go back to that?
Just for a second.
Okay.
In expense, I'm sorry. So the pass-through money that each of the cities will be getting out of from the county, from the CARES Act, would not this potential...
If it really happens.
Right. But would it not potentially fit in being able to use it?
Absolutely.
As that expenditure?
Absolutely.
Okay. Because
we're looking at all things, because you know that our people are very inventive about looking for money and leveraging money and trying to spread that dollar.
Right. Well, I think it'd be hard for that to not happen, since the county's
right.
Put out the list of how much each city gets.
And I will say, like I said, I'm finally calling Dr. Weidmer and Chief Carr, have been all over me about talking about, you know, the what ifs in the future and make sure we stay on top of this.
I didn't mean to
and
cut that off, that
we have
popped
a lot
into
of
my head.
Opportunities coming up that they're working on a lot of different things too, to protect our city and protect our residents. So
okay.
We'll be sharing those with you. But I'll go back to Chase. This is Chase.
Start talking about lawyers now.
Yeah, someone introduce something else quick.
So Chase Andresi, he was, you know, selected by a body of a panel and by his now peers we work with, and the council got to visit with him. He's been drinking from a fire hose, but he says he loves reading MDAs and the locals and
just
respond things he likes to read late at night. Chase, do you want to make any comment on record for the council?
No, I'm just excited to be here, excited to work with Harriman City, the council, with staff and the administration. I love working with cities. I've worked with a lot of cities, as you know, over the last few years, and Harriman's a great one, and I'm excited to be here for a long time.
So I loved how quickly you responded on the first kind of request, even from the council. Thank you. It was very thorough and straight to the point. So.
And I appreciate that you gave an actual recommendation as well. That was very helpful. Here are all the options. Here are what's going on. This is what I would recommend. And that was, I think, very well done. So we do appreciate it. Sorry, I cut you off, Sherry.
Okay.
It's right in with the team, because I can look at our team and an audience, and I get text messages and emails from them 24/7. They shouldn't give that much to the city, but they do, because they can't let stuff go. And Chase just has fit right in already. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but L is his wife's name, and hopefully she'll forgive us. So
she's pretty patient.
The other thing I want to talk
about.
We will
put that to the test.
He understands that.
We want to toot our horn a little bit again, and Alan and Tammy don't know I'm going to say this, but I know we're not in general meeting, but next council meeting I want to talk about and show that we have got our 2019 budget presentation award again. And what was actually good for me, Alan, I appreciate you forwarding the whole email this time, which was good, because I got to read how it's graded, not scored, and the comments made. And about what the presentation means, and it's in depth. They drill our budget people, our finance people, on what it needs to look like and what they're looking for, and it just helps us square up our budget for the public and for you all. And then they were very complimentary about what the communication teams are on the narrative, and then the pictures and diagrams and things that help explain things. And then they actually made some recommendations. that keeps on strengthening our budget year after year. I just want to take a moment of work meeting to talk about that because I think we people underscore what that means, and people that's done the work and you see how they're scored and graded, it's not just by chance. There's a heck of a lot of work that goes into that to qualify for it. So thanks, Alan, and your team, and Tammy and your team to put that together, and John LaFoe, I call him John LaFoe, add nicknames for people, right? You got the doctor, John LaFoe. But there are key people that help put that together so that the public can understand it well. And they grade on how easy it is to find things in the budget. It's one of their things. So,
I don't know how you guys keep improving on it every year, to be honest. You raise the bar, and then you have to figure out how to raise it again. And I mean, we say, obviously, that you do that to help the public understand it. But let's be honest, that's so we can understand it.
And I would just say, I mean, I'm looking at financial statements and audit reports all day, every day, and I hate them with the passion. but I can say I actually enjoy reading through our budget. I've read through the tentative budget, and I really enjoy how it's laid out. There's a good narrative around so many of the topics that explain why this is an issue, how it's being administered, all those kind of issues. I think anybody who has a question about what's going on in our city finances can look in that budget report and understand. It's excellent. So thank you.
So I actually want to give that on the general meeting next time and talk about a little bit more about, you know, we'll have a little certificate we'll show, but I just want to keep reminding the council and the public that's not a small task. We have other cities around us, not many. We have other agencies that strive to have that, and they all understand how hard it is to get there. And we've been able to do that for several years. And the thing is, I think where I read through the report and the scoring was, because they know we've gotten it in the past, it seems like we get scored a little harder. Does that make sense? You agree with that, Alan? They're really nitpicking at us. Make improvements. So that's what it means. They make us raise the bar as a city to present that to them, and we have a team here that gets that accomplished. And it's just not the same template. You made it this year. It means it's harder next year. You have to jump higher for the bar. So that's what it kind of said to me. The last thing is back to budget too. I want to stay on the path publicly, making comment about as we review our budget, and I say we because I know the managers, the directors, Tammy and Alan and myself review the budget frequently, and it seems like it's we get sideways with it a little bit because we're all passionate about making sure the budget's in a good, solid place because in these times, we want to make sure we're sending a message to our council and our public that Harriman's okay. I heard a comment at Memorial Flag Ceremony on Monday. They were a neighboring city resident, come up to see our flag ceremony, and they actually happened upon it by chance. They thought it was wonderfully put together. But they said, we heard Harriman's in bad shape. And I said, what? And I had to look at Alan because that's offensive. We've tried very hard to not only have a 25% fund balance in our fund balance, but make sure in these times that we have a contingency plan past that. And to build confidence in the council and trust us to do what we've asked you to do, trust us to watch it during these times. And here again, we had a little measure today about what's going on in our economy. And Harriman's just doesn't seem to be affected by some of the other cities, the way they're affected during this time. Doesn't mean we're not being cautious. We're still being very cautious. And if we decide to do fireworks stuff, we are very cautious about letting go of that money. And if we do, trust me, it's already Wendy's had to pry that money back out of our hands. Because we, you know, she gets it too. She don't want to spend the money, but we want to make sure we're on solid ground. So I wanted to build that confidence, not only to, because our employees are hearing awful stuff out on the street too. And a neighboring city, like I said before, they made an announcement first week of March, and they didn't have the signs. So our employees, most of them are very grateful, but they're also like, you know, is anything going to happen? Is everything okay? And I'm here to assure you that I can look at Alan, and he would nod and say, we're doing okay. We're taking care of the budget. We're being fiscally responsible, and
we won't recommend the council spending for lamps or anything else in this bill. We feel confident. And that is a public safety thing, I think, in our future that we need to consider. But we're not going to spend money without feeling like we're going to be okay. And that's kind of my report for the work meeting. And if you got any questions for me or direction.
I'll just make a quick comment, if I can. You said an important word there to me, and I think to everybody, honestly. But the word you used there was trust. And again, there's that works obviously in multiple directions. And it's not something that's just automatically given. It's something that's earned over time. And again, I think that there is a tremendous amount of trust, and I'll only speak for myself here. But as a council member, there's a tremendous amount of trust in staff because we know the caliber of people that we have here and the expertise that they show in their jobs, week after week. And I rely on each member of staff to be able to bring that information forward and to provide us the information we need to make some of those decisions. But again, that comes through trusting the information that we're getting from you. And each of you have demonstrated that, you know, again, time and time again, that we have the ability to do that. And, you know, secondarily to that, obviously, is the trust that's placed in us as council members by our residents, by electing us and then really holding us to the fire to make those appropriate decisions. But again, that comes back to the information we get from you. And so when you said that word, it really just set off something to me that's really what this is all built on is trust and having the trust of our residents. That again, we are in a financial stable place and that we're making the appropriate decisions during a very challenging time. And again, the uncertainty that exists out there. And we've seen some of the other reports out of other cities, which allows, I guess, that uncertainty to be fueled unnecessarily a lot of times because of some of those other reports out there. But again, I'm very impressed with what our city has been able to do really over many, many years. The fiscal responsibility that has been shown, again, to have that reserve in place, to have the foresight to know that we can weather a little bit of a storm and we have ways to put contingencies in place to weather an even longer storm if we need to. And I appreciate that. And to back to the caliber of people. And now that we have Mr. Andreese as part of our staff, again, I think the reason you mentioned that he just seems to fit in so well is because, again, the caliber of staff that we have, what we're able to attract and what that means for us as an organization and us as a city to have that moving forward. It brings me a lot of peace and comfort knowing, again, the people that we have in place to help us really to make our jobs much, much easier as we move forward. So I'll just say thanks to every one of you for the work that you put in and welcome to the team. Chase, we had a brief discussion before and was able to realize that I worked with his dad in the fire service. So now I like him even more.
Uh-oh. Looking at Troy.
So thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm just impressed a firefighter could produce a lawyer.
Oh, he was disappointed.
So I had to.
Now, they tried to say that the cop produced a doctor, but it wasn't 100% true.
So with that, I believe we have moved to the end of our work meeting, which I am
awesome.
Amazed. Are we able to go? Are we doing a closed meeting today?
It's been noticed a certain time. We have to wait.
So we
just
can't.
Because it's been noticed for the end?
More for 7 o'clock, and that's why for our next meeting.
Oh, for our next meeting. No, he was asking about closed.
Closed.
Can we do the closed session?
We could. That's not been the. I'm looking at my boss over there. She's.
I wasn't even looking at you. I was looking
no,
at
I'm,
Jackie.
No, I'm looking at Jackie.
I was looking
robot.
At Jackie. So, okay. So we need to. Okay. That's right. So I will accept a motion to adjourn our work meeting.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.